Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined this morning by our live blog directors, John Rayhorn and Jamie Jores. We are talking some Packers football. Lots to talk about today. Even John Rayhorn says on the live blog, so this should be a quiet show. Nothing going on in the world of the Packers, right? You know, every morning I make the Packers calendar post on Cheesehead TV. Of course, it's always loaded during the season with, you know, practices and press conferences and media appearances, and kind of slows down a little bit during the offseason. This week in particular, you know, with mini camp being over, most of the players are out of town, I have particularly not a lot to write about. There's the official Green Bay Packers youth camps going on. But that's about all I've found that's, like, you know, scheduled ahead of time. It's the unscheduled stuff that is dominating. The unscheduled stuff with, as far as, like, yesterday, all of a sudden, out of the blue, Anthony Hargrove is going to have his own little press conference, make a statement in New York City outside NFL headquarters. I mean, he was there for his appeal anyway. But there was that. All of a sudden, Johnny Jolly, it's reported that he's going to seek reinstatement into the NFL. And then the story that James Jones is don't get no respect. Doing his best Rodney Dangerfield impression. And that's where we'll start today. If you want to comment, please feel free to comment on our live blog. Please tweet with the hashtags Railbird or the hashtags CheeseheadTV. All those comments will show up. Feel free to call into the show if you want as well. 347-352-0154. Let's start with James Jones. Wide receiver James Jones. In an article published by Fox Sports Wisconsin yesterday by reporter Paul Immig, James Jones is quoted as saying he doesn't get any respect. And he says, I don't get no respect. Ignore the double negative, I guess. But anyhow, you know, he was talking about, of course, that the article was about the Packers' deep receiving core. And Jones commented how he's frustrated, and not just himself, but all the wide receivers, and even quarterback Aaron Rodgers, who's got to throw to all these wide receivers. And certainly, that's understandable. I can understand how it would be frustrating that, you know, of course, everybody wants the ball. But, you know, there's only one football during a game. And, you know, not everybody can touch the ball all the time. That's just the reality of the matter. But Jones goes on to say, I don't get no respect. So he says in interviews with the media, he's just going to keep repeating the word respect and get T-shirts made that say it as well. Well, of course, if you're me, this comes off as sour grapes. There's always this kind of feeling with James Jones that this kind of respect thing just follows him around everywhere. It seems like every season he makes a comment like this that is just like, it makes him, it doesn't really portray him as like this person you want to hang around. He always seems so negative in his interviews, just like, can't seem to take the high road. Everybody understands that it's frustrating. But, you know, when you're one of the best teams in the NFL, 2 years ago winning a Super Bowl, last year going 15-1, you know, just accept it for what it is. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I don't know. James Jones did not exactly qualify his statements. I don't know who he's saying doesn't give him respect, whether it's maybe the fans or the media. But if he is speaking about the Packers, he would be dead wrong, because he's, among every team in the NFL, he's more respected by the Green Bay Packers than any other team. James Jones, of course, tried free agency a little over 1 year ago. I suppose it wasn't over a year ago because of the lockout. What did free agency happen? And what are we talking about? The August time frame? Anyhow, it tries the free agent market, gets no response out there. What was it? The Vikings showed a little bit of interest, but that was it. Didn't show him, didn't offer him a contract. The Packers do bring him back for a modest contract, getting paid millions of dollars to play a child's game. So, you know what? You're getting respect by the Green Bay Packers as much as any you'll get in the NFL from any other team comparatively. So I'm not sure if it's one of those things where he's responding to the fans or the media not respecting him. Of course, there's been rumors swirling around. Our own Aaron Nagler here saying the Packers attempted to trade James Jones during the draft. And maybe that's what he's referring to. And not just Aaron Nagler. I think there wasn't there a report in Houston for some reason about him being a potential trade target as well. But anyhow, it just comes off as sour grapes. You don't hear the other wide receivers on the team making comments like this. Of course, for the most part, their wide receivers getting more catches than James Jones, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, JerMichael Finley, all having better seasons than James Jones. But I mean, still, it just comes off as negative, whiny. You know, I don't know. It just rubs you the wrong way when this happens. You know, I was fairly impressed with James Jones this past season. In 2010, he had the issue with the drops. Brad Stanley on the live blog saying James Jones always seems to drop the big pass. And, you know, he really had an issue with drops in 2010, the Super Bowl season. That was really kind of annoying. James Jones was the 2010 version of JerMichael Finley. In 2010 was James Jones, 2011 JerMichael Finley with the drops. But I was pleasantly surprised with James Jones in 2011. Yeah, I was just doing a column for Bleacher Report last week, I think, and James Jones did drop like 10% of his passes, his targets in 2011, higher than you'd want. But I think he did improve somewhat. You know, I was really impressed with the average yards per catch. And it was, as I thought, it was fairly high. And if anybody out there is really bored on our live blog, wants to look at James Jones' career stats and find out his average yards per catch per season, I thought it was really good in 2011. I'm not sure if he had a career high, but he seemed to make some big plays when he did catch the ball last year. And you know, he did respectable. He had a fair amount of touchdown catches. But, you know, John Rahor makes a good point here on the live blog. James needs to accept that he's not a one or two, maybe even a three on this team. Accept his role, shut up, and if you're unhappy, leave when your contract is up. I suppose that would be my sentiments as well. You're not a number one, maybe probably even a number two guy. But you know what, James Jones? Be the best number three you can. Maybe you're not number three. Maybe you are number four, but strive to be number three. Be the best number three wide receiver in the NFL. You know what? And just be happy. You know what? And you know, if you are unhappy, leave. I mean, but you couldn't leave last year. Nobody else wanted you. So to say things like this, but, you know, it's, I know, it's just frustrating from a fan standpoint to hear things like this. So there you go. There's your five or so, probably more than 5 minutes on James Jones. Moving on. Yesterday, Johnny Jolly, it's reported by Brad Biggs of the National Football Post. And to disclose the connection, the National Football Post, according to Rob Domofsky of the Green Bay Press Gazette, had pointed this out. I hadn't even noticed this. The National Football Post is owned by Jack Bechta, an agent in the NFL. I knew that. But I didn't know that Jack Bechta was now Johnny Jolly's agent. Jolly has changed agents since, you know, since he got into this whole legal trouble. I believe it was Brian Overstreet at one time. Changed agents, now Jack Bechta. So that's probably why that report showed up on the National Football Post. Regardless, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with the National Football Post reporting on that. The point they're making is still valid, or the news is that Johnny Jolly has applied for reinstatement to the NFL. That doesn't mean he's going to get it. And no, I've been asked. I do not know a time frame as to when the NFL will make a decision. I would assume one way or the other, yes or no, Johnny Jolly will get a response from the NFL before training camp, even if it's no, we're not going to reinstate you yet. But you would think he would just get a response, you know, so he knows and whatever. But anyway, so Johnny Jolly applying for reinstatement, the Packers offering no comment. It interesting here, though. So Rob Domofsky contacts the Packers, asks for them for comment. Not surprisingly, they don't comment, and they probably won't until Johnny Jolly is officially reinstated to the NFL, whenever that may be, whether that's days, weeks, months, or even years down the road. What's interesting is Lance Allen, a television reporter from WTMJ in Milwaukee, somehow, somewhere, I don't know where, interviewed Packers president Mark Murphy yesterday. And to my knowledge, this interview hasn't aired anywhere, or at least I couldn't find it. He tweeted, though, comments from Mark Murphy in regards to a question he asked him about Johnny Jolly. And Mark Murphy, who's the Packers president, and albeit he is the president, he's the highest ranking guy on the whole team, but he's not the general manager and he's not the coach, which sometimes the president talking about player matters isn't always the thing you should be looking for. But being that he is the highest ranking person on the team, you got to put a little bit of stock into it as well. Basically saying that Johnny Jolly should get his life in order first. That's a paraphrase, and Lance Allen had paraphrased it anyway. I included this link to the tweet in this morning's Packers Day Links. If you scroll to the bottom of the page, it's right there at the bottom right-hand corner. You can check it out for yourself. But yeah, so Mark Murphy saying Johnny Jolly should get his life in order, something to that effect, before he thinks about playing for the Packers again. It gives you the impression that maybe the Packers are not interested in having him back, or that indeed they want to see a fairly high amount of progress from him in terms of his addiction to drugs, codeine, of course, being connected to purple drink, that mixture of cough syrup, codeine, with soda, Jolly Ranchers. We've talked about that in the past here on Railbird Central. And, there's a lot going on. First of all, again, I have no idea when he's going to be reinstated. Have no clue when this is going to happen. If he does, you know, should the Packers bring him back or shouldn't they? Kind of an unintentional counterpoint happened in the media. Mike Vandermause of the Green Bay Press Gazette writing a column saying that the Packers should give Jolly a second chance. I might argue, in fact, that it's a third chance, but regardless, Bill Huber of Packer Report writing a column that the Packers need to move on. And I can see both sides. I really can. It's a difficult issue, and I'm not sure what the Packers should do. Let's just play make-believe for a second and assume Johnny Jolly is reinstated before the start of training camp. Let's assume that for the sake of argument here. Comment from Chazman on the live blog. I think a part of his rehabilitation would be to get to it in a team-oriented environment and also keep him in Green Bay and not Houston. That's a fair point. I can see that. So let's assume Jolly is reinstated. So the Packers then would have a decision to make. He's under their, you know, he's a part of the Packers. He's on their reserve suspended list right now, but they have his rights. He signed a one-year, roughly $2.5 million contract before he was suspended. So the Packers have a one-year contract with him that they can honor. So they have a decision to make. They can honor the contract, or they have to get rid of him, whether it's by trade or release him, or I guess those are your only two options. And I can't imagine any team out there is going to give them anything for a trade. They're just a little bit too risky. So, the way I see it is I don't think it hurts to bring Johnny Jolly in training camp to see what he's like. Is he a changed person? Is he still in football shape? Johnny Jolly says in this article at the National Football Post that he is in shape. He's been working out. Says he'd like to lose about 10 pounds, but says he's doing well. Again, that's coming from Johnny Jolly himself, so I wouldn't expect anything else from him. But still, I don't see any hurt in seeing, because I agree. I'm kind of like Chazman here. I'm all about second chances. I'm all about third chances. Albeit with severe restrictions. I don't believe in fourth chances, I don't think. You do get him away from Houston. I think the best chance for him to get rehabilitated is if he's working. He's got solid employment. He's got something to take his attention away from drugs and has a support system, things like that. I really do think that would be the best thing for his development. So, here's where I'm at, is I don't think it hurts the Packers to take a look at him in training camp. So he comes in, maybe it's same old Johnny Jolly attitude. He still hasn't changed. He still is running around with the wrong people. Okay. You can cut him and be no worse for the wear. The Packers might want to take a look at him because they do have two players who will be suspended by the NFL pending appeal in Mike Neal and Anthony Hargrove. And maybe he can, plug a gap until they get back. Or, you know, at the time Johnny Jolly was suspended, he was, you know, a pretty good player in the NFL. Not a Pro Bowler, but a pretty good player. Maybe he's worth keeping on the team. There's also the argument that if you do keep him, you are probably cutting a younger player at his expense. And I don't know if you want to do that. But again, there's no hurt in training camp and finding out. All of a sudden, if you have two injuries on the defensive line, well, all of a sudden, Johnny Jolly becomes a little bit more valuable as long as he has indeed turned his life around. So, yeah, I mean, you know, again, I mean, there's all sorts of things you have to find out. You just got to find out if his personal life is intact. Second of all, you got to find out if he's in football shape. And if neither of those things happen, if he is same old Johnny Jolly, if he isn't in football shape, well, that's the way the cookie crumbles. You cut him, you move on, and the Packers don't have to pay him then, as long as they cut him before the start of the regular season. There's risk involved too, if you keep him and all of a sudden he relapses during the season. Not only are you stuck with having to pay him then, you also cut him at the expense of probably keeping a younger player. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider here. A lot of things to consider, and it's no easy solution. But I guess it, you're months away from having to make that decision. So, again, there's just no hurt. I suppose there's always the chance to, albeit perhaps an unlikely one, that the Packers bring Jolly back, he plays in the preseason, and he's a stud in the preseason. He actually plays well. Maybe all of a sudden there is a trade market then where you could get something before the start of the regular season. I know. I understand. The chances of that happening are slim. Trades happen in the NFL, but rarely do any are any made except in the offseason. That's when the most trades are made in the NFL, during the offseason. The ones in season, most of the time, they just don't happen that often. They do happen, but not as much as the offseason. So, anyway, that's Johnny Jolly. And now, one more topic the day. In fact, maybe a couple topics yet. But yesterday, Anthony Hargrove. We'll talk about this now. Talking about defensive linemen for the Packers. Anthony Hargrove makes his speech from New York City outside NFL headquarters, saying the NFL has got it wrong about him, basically claiming his innocence. And the bombshell that he dropped was that it was not him in the video of the NFL film saying, "Give me my money," or something to, along those lines. You know, and it is really weird, this whole situation. I mean, first of all, this whole bounty gate is far from over. You know, apparently the NFL will rule sometime this week on whether or not they're going to uphold their suspensions. But even if they do, the story is far from over, because I think the suspended players like Anthony Hargrove, like the rest of them, Jonathan Vilma, Scott Fujita, Will Smith, will take legal action against the NFL, perhaps requesting an injunction. Or perhaps, isn't Jonathan Vilma already suing Roger Goodell? You know, I don't know what route they will take in terms of legal action, but I think it's going to happen, because I assume the NFL is going to, say that their suspensions are going to hold. So, you know, I really am torn somewhat about whether or not a bounty system was in place in New Orleans, because I do somewhat agree that the evidence the NFL has shown has not been conclusive. Here's where I am, folks, and bear with me here as I try to explain this. Obviously, there was a pay-for-performance system, which is not allowed by the NFL. But, I mean, there's, you know, as far as pay-for-performance, that doesn't necessarily imply bounty. That just means, paying for things like, you know, they have to give up money when they commit a mental error, or they get paid when they do good things like score a touchdown. But regardless, we're talking about a bounty here. And I think what happened in New Orleans was incredibly dumb. What was put forth by defensive coordinator Greg Williams and allowed to happen by head coach Sean Payton, in that they allowed a culture of language to be used that encouraged perhaps hurting players with, you know, this whole hit the head or cut off the head and the body will die. That kind of language being used by Greg Williams. I guess I'm just not positive that you can take those words at a literal level wanting that Greg Williams should was encouraging players to, you know, hit the head. I think it was kind of a metaphorical thing. And you know, like he's saying, you know, with a snake, you know, you cut off the head, the body will die. It was a metaphor, but I think it's very stupid because I just think it created a culture that where you get people acting like that, you're acting callously towards players' health. And even though if it was a metaphor, it's not the proper language to use. It's incredibly stupid. But like I said here, I'm not sure I've seen 100% evidence that there has been a bounty program in New Orleans. Maybe there is. And I'm not saying there's not. There's not a bounty program. I'm just saying, show me conclusive evidence. So, you know, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. You know, and I haven't seen everything. I am liable to change my mind here. I am liable to say there was a bounty program in place. These guys should be punished. I just need to see it perhaps myself. And there's, you know, so much out there that I haven't seen at all. Apparently, the NFL has 200 pages worth of documents. Well, maybe if I were to go through all those 200 pages or whatever, maybe I would find out that there was a bounty in place there in New Orleans. So I don't have the time or the really want to sift through 200 pages. But if somebody points it out to me, I'm liable to change my mind. I don't know where I'm at right now, but perhaps it will all play out. Like I said, the story is far from over. And there's your 2 cents on Anthony Hargrove. And perhaps just before we sign off today, to get everybody riled up before we go, an interview was published yesterday at PackersNews.com, which is run by the Gannett newspapers, the Green Bay Press Gazette, but a whole slew of local papers as well, which is where I think the interview actually originated, perhaps from the Door County Advocate. But anyhow, an interview with General Manager Ron Wolf, former Packers General Manager Ron Wolf, appeared at PackersNews.com. You can go check it out. In which, if you read through it, they talk about many topics, several topics. But the money quote is general manager saying Brett Favre is the greatest player in his opinion in Packers history. There you go. And you know, that just in and of itself, Brett Favre alone, the mere mention of his name is going to get people riled up. But the fact that he's mentioned as the greatest player in franchise history, you know what? I'm not sure I can buy it. I acknowledge Brett Favre is one of the greatest players in Packers franchise history, but as far as the greatest, I just can't do it. I just can't put the NFL's, not the franchises, the NFL, well, the franchise too, but the NFL's all-time interceptions leader. All-time. I'm not sure I can put him at the very top of the mountain. Not when there's guys named Don Hutson and Bart Starr there. Maybe even Ray Nitschke as well. He's right up there with them. I'm just not sure I can say he's the greatest. I suppose his only competition is Don Hutson and Bart Starr. And it is so tough to compare Bart Starr and Brett Favre. You know, in Bart Starr won 2 Super Bowls, one more than Brett Favre. That's acknowledged. He was a great and fantastic leader, a great and fantastic person. But Bart Starr was nowhere as prolific a passer as Brett Favre. He had nowhere near the talent of Brett Favre. And again, I did not live in the Bart Starr era. But I think I've seen enough highlights to show that. And I've certainly seen plenty of Brett Favre, but I don't think it's even, you know, much of a statement. I don't even think I'm really going out on a limb to say that Brett Favre was more physically talented. The fact was that Bart Starr was more successful. And again, part of that has to do with the team. But I think there is something to be said for leadership and what he was able to do there with the team. And you know, Bart Starr perhaps a little bit more of a game manager, but still a great player overall. Don Hutson, perhaps people say the best wide receiver of all time, or at least in Packers history. And again, it's so hard to compare players from, you know, when did, you know, Don Hutson play? The 1930s we're talking about. So, you know, it's really hard to compare apples and oranges here. But, you know, anyhow, that's just something to think about as you go through your day. Who's the best player in Packers franchise history? But anyhow, thank you everybody so much, folks, for joining us here on a Wednesday on Railbird Central. We'll be back again on Friday to wrap up your work week here during the off season. It's been fun. We'll see you then. On behalf of John Rahor, on behalf of Jamie Jors, I'm Brian Caravu, and I leave you with a song today called Barker by Keller Williams on Psy Fidelity Records. We'll see you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.